Today I'm here with Keith from Break.com, and Keith's going to tell us a little bit about him and his business and what he's been up to. So Keith, why don't you take away?
Great. Well, I think by way of introduction, last week Break actually transitioned from being Break.com to Break Media. And Break Media, the transition was made primarily because, in addition to Break, we now own and operate a total of four sites, which I can go into a little bit. And we've also created an ad network specifically targeting men 18 to 34. So when advertisers come to us, we can offer them a variety of niches and psychographics to advertise against, as well as just offering them pure scale. In total, Break Media now reaches, I think, 38 million unique visitors a month globally and 25 million unique visitors a month domestically. So it's, our goal is to try to become a dominant entertainment brand for men 18 to 34, both from an advertiser standpoint and a user standpoint.
So what would be your total monthly visitors?
If you count the wholly owned site and the network itself, it's, I think, 38 million globally, and domestically it's 25 million.
So globally, by that you mean the total is 38
million? Worldwide.
So that means Spark.com, which is 1 million a day, he's 30 million a month, so he's a pretty solid range.
I think on a daily basis we add up the total reach. So this is the unique visitors who stop by every single day, or at least once a month. I think in total number of pure visits, if I added up across the properties, it's probably the neighborhood of 130, 150 million visits a month. Because we've got a fairly loyal audience for certain properties that come back all the time. I think the average person comes back to Break.com itself, I think, 4.5 times a month. We've got a couple of more niche sites. One's called Holy Taco, which is men's entertainment, and one is called Cage Potato, which is mixed martial arts, and the people who come back there come back almost daily. And then if you look at from our network partner side, they're very similar. They've got some fairly significant engagement figures. So I think Break itself is 50 million or 54 million total visits a month to 20 million unique visitors. So does that differentially make sense? Like, so we have some guys who come back more often than others.
Yeah, totally. I have to ask kind of dumb questions. I don't understand your model that well, and I'm sorry for that. So there's your leader site, your main site is Break.com, then Holy Taco, HOLYTSTO.com is another.
There's another, and the last one, which we just launched a week ago, is called Chickapedia, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a wiki for celebrity females. So, the goal is to be the largest celebrity database. You can't get a much better name. If you have a chance to visit the site, you'll see why people come back a lot. It's completely user generated. It's completely user moderated. There's already, I think, over 1,600 celebrity profiles on there.
I'm just trying to keep me citing it. It's the kind of site that we all laugh at and say, that's just garbage over visit. I mean, we all secretly go and visit anyway.
No, it's like there are very few high concept things on the internet that are left. And so, there's very few things you can just say the name of something and suddenly everyone gets what it is. That you can actually acquire the domain name and build a useful product around. Like, by the time you intercept all those circles, there's not very few. So when we found one that we believed in, we were very excited for it, and we went out and pursued it full force.
So I'm looking at the Jessica Alba page right now. A nice picture of it. So this is your users have gone in and they're writing the bio and adding more photos and stuff to the profile. That's what happens.
That's it. And I mean, I think my guess is this page has been protected, meaning only registered users can edit it. Because at the end of the day, a wiki is completely editable. If you're a registered user, you can go and update and, put it wherever you want on the page. And if you say something nasty, it'll probably get changed by another registered user.
How do you deal, you've got a lot of photos here, and Wikipedia sometimes has trouble getting photos. How do you deal with the copyrighted stuff?
It's sort of DMCA. The nice thing about being a wiki, anyone can put it up and anyone can take it down. So if the copyright owner comes by, you can just take down a picture. Now, obviously, when you upload pictures to us, you're claiming that you own the rights to it. And, in cases where that's not true, the best part about wiki software is, it is completely open, so people can go in and just delete whatever pictures they want, even if they don't know if they can do that, unfortunately.
All right. So to understand your model a bit better, then, so you have four sites: Cage Potato, Holy Taco, Chickapedia, and Break.com. Are they your main four sites? Do you have any other big ones?
Not at this point. No. And then we have a network, and then we have a network of sites that we sell advertising for, and that's another 20 sites. Which we don't have to go into each one. But, in essentially verticals that we had advertisers who wanted to spend money, we went out and found partners who had also large audiences.
Right.
And the model is
I'm fascinated by a site like Break.com. I mean, you're out there, you've got this monster amount of traffic, and you've got a great domain name. How does it make money, and can you talk about what kind of money it actually makes? I mean, your electric rank, I'm right now, it's 412. How good of a model is it?
It's great. I mean, for Brick specifically, we get anywhere between, 1.25 million and 1.5 million people a day. And we show anywhere from, I think page impression wise, we do anywhere from 15 to 30 million page impressions a day. So we've got a fairly massive amount of inventory, and the inventory is all for a demographic that is not watching TV anymore and spending a lot of time playing video games and on the internet. And so we've built a really successful advertising model around helping advertisers reach that demographic and entertain and engage them. And so, you know, we started selling, you know, originally when we first started, we just leveraged advertising networks, you know, which are third-party networks that just fill your inventory. In July 06, we hired our first salesperson, and we now have a team of 8 salespeople, and about 12 people that support them, or 12 to 25 people. So we, you know, in total, we've got a fairly significant ad organization, and, you know, we go out and we try to sell ads and, you know, and create experiences for advertisers trying to reach the audience. So, you know, I think, you know, right now we're running campaigns for, you know, some clients who are in the entertainment space like CBS and Paramount Pictures, and at the same time we're running campaigns for people in the fast food space. We just ran something with Burger King. You know, alcohol, anybody trying to reach, you know, people who are 18 to 34, become our advertisers. But it is a very good model if you have the scale. If you are not as large as we are, it is very difficult to justify hiring a sales force. And when you look at the network properties that are our partners, the reason that we sell their ads for them is because it just wasn't cost effective for them to build their own sales teams. And it took us 2 years and cost us, you know, well north of $3 million to build our sales organization.
So why do it? Why not just work with Guerrilla Nation or with John Battali?
Federated.
Someone like him. Why about going out and managing and building your own sales force and one of those best stuff for you?
Because of Prake, we felt we had kind of property you can build a much larger base off of. And if you look at, you know, whether it's the traffic figures or the engagement figures or the loyalty figures, you know, we have such a strong audience. And if you let anybody, any of those guys control your access to the advertisers, you're naturally limiting yourself. On top of that, we knew that at one point we would leverage this audience and start new properties. And so, you know, it's okay if you just have one site, but at some stage, if you run 5 properties, and, you know, in total you're reaching, you know, 25 million people, you can really justify the cost of it. And you know, we crossed that critical threshold about the time we hired our first sales guy. Up until then, you know, we weren't sure. We were in the same boat that a lot of site owners are, which is, you know, are you going to cross the threshold to the point at which it makes sense to invest in people? But for, you know, for somebody of, you know, a normal website size, which is, there are thousands of these, it gets anywhere from, you know, 0 to 2 million unique visitors a month, it absolutely makes sense to partner with somebody, whether it's Break or Grill Nation or Federated or Glam or somebody else to handle your sales.
Right.
I mean, selling ads is a tough business. Yeah. So.
Yeah, well, so. Maybe we can just talk a little bit more about Break, because that's a model I'm really intrigued by, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about how you sell ads and how you manage that. Is that
fair? Sure. Yeah, so go ahead.
Well, Break itself, I mean, how many people are behind Break, and can you talk about some of the revenues behind it?
So Break itself, you know, full-time people noted the site. You know, I don't even know. It's somewhere, you know, it's probably 35. But, you know, a lot of that is sales, a lot of the salespeople. You know, Break started out trying to be exactly what it is, which is we never started out trying to be YouTube. We started out trying to be a video entertainment destination for guys. And we did it because back in 04, when we were really starting out, there was not any place that you could, no great place where you had a great user experience and good content. None of the traditional media companies had really put up, you know, really strong video sites yet. And we just wanted a place where we could go and watch funny videos and be mature. And the site, you know, the site traffic, you know, was modest at first. And then what we started doing was buying original videos from the audience. And that was really a differentiator at first, and so remains a differentiator, which is if you upload a video to Break and we feature it, we will pay you for your content. You know, we pay anywhere from $200 to, you know, $2,000 for a video. And, you know, we've paid out, I think if you go to the site, you'll see well north of $1 million to people. And, you know, we built technology in the back end that handles, you know, the sort of filters through the content and let's just know which videos to feature. So we don't actually have anyone here watching all these videos. You know, we get thousands of submissions, so it would be prohibitive to do that. And I think by having an audience that, you know, watches and rates the videos, and by building a community around men, we managed to grow really, really quickly. And it became sort of a virtuous cycle of more people were giving us good content, the more people that gave us good content, the more people that came to the site, the more people that gave us good content. And now we're legitimately one of the most important places, I think, online to distribute content if you're trying to reach the male demo. You know, you can put an equivalent video on YouTube's homepage and our homepage, and they might get slightly more video views for the video, but, you know, they're not going to get many more views, and ours will all be of a particularly focused demo. So that's why you see people and content creators in particular coming to us to work and try to figure out how they can reach our audience. You know, in terms of money, we don't really disclose you know, how much money we make, but, you know, we've got a fairly large team here. We didn't raise any capital until July of this year. So revenue has been substantial enough that we've afforded that we were able to build a business and grow and hire out a pretty decent sized staff. I think we have 75 people now without really raising money. So you can do the math there if you have P&L and know how much people cost in Los Angeles. Which is overbased.
Just working out. So how did you get started? I mean, was it a couple of you guys in the basement, or where did it actually come from?
No, not at all, actually. So I spent a bunch of years up in Silicon Valley where I helped start a company. I worked at a company called Classified 2000 that got bought by Excite. And then I helped start a company called BillPoint that got bought by eBay. And I started a company called OnePage that was bought by Sybase. And I really wanted to do something more fun than what we were doing at OnePage, which is corporate software. And I moved down to LA, and I started playing a lot on the internet and looking at video. And I found this site that I really, really loved called Big Boys. And I literally called the guy up, or I emailed him, and I said, I love your site. Can I partner with you? And he said, sure. And so we became partners, and a little later on, we brought in a third friend of ours, Yvonne. And we've been building out a business ever since, and he still works out of his home in Huntley, Illinois. And they're, you know, built the staff and team out here in Los Angeles. But it really was, I found a product I really, really liked. I called the guy up, and I asked how we could work together. And the rest is, just basic building a business from there.
So
Break.com used to be, was it BigBoys.com? Yeah, it was even worse than that. It was Big-Boys.com, which is, you had to actually remember to type in a dash, or you couldn't even find us.
Because I think I do remember that thought.
Yeah, no, and it was great. We had to switch the name, though, because we couldn't get the name without the dash. We went out early on and decided to, if we're not going to win the name, we better have an alternative. So.
May I ask what you made
the a lot. Let's leave it at that. Also, we had to get it, but it wasn't, it didn't break the bank.
Yeah, right.
It's not drugs.com. We didn't pay $850,000.
Fair enough. There's some expensive money out there.
I think all of them are expensive nowadays.
Yeah. So this started as a partnership between you and BigBoys.com, and then you became CEO and donated to Break.com.
The guy from BigBoys still works with us. He's a great guy.
How does he think of the director now? Because I think it's something you're running out of investment for, and now you've gone and made it into a bigger company.
I think still part owner, so he's pretty happy. Yeah. I mean, I think he'd be less happy if he didn't own it. Most of it.
And is he in Los Angeles as well?
No, he's still based in Chicago. I think when it's warm, I make it out to Chicago and see him. But he has only come out here one time. It's one of those very internet-y relationships where we've only met a couple times, but we've been working together every day for a number of years.
That's interesting. So that's an interesting point right there. So he's someone that's basically, it's his mind and it's his personality that built the site, and now you're running it. Is he the one that makes the final decisions on what runs on the site, or how does that work?
I mean, he's definitely influential. It was one of those things where he had a good voice and he had a good eye for editorial. What we managed to do, so it wasn't one guy having to focus all day, we managed to sort of grow it and institutionalize it. I don't think he's involved every day in picking out which content we feature. But I think what he really did was he figured out how to appeal to the 15-year-old boy in all of us. And we've done a good job of sort of, institutionalizing how to make immature content, across a number of different properties, not just Break, but on the other ones as well. I think the other big thing is, we really do listen to the community. I'm a big believer that, if you have a site and people are telling you stuff every day, whether it's in what they watch, where they go, what they do, I think what we both were really strong at was figuring out what the people in our audience wanted and didn't want. And, not just imposing our own tastes on them. So I would say more so than anybody in particular editorial voice, it was the community's voice, which is why we're really good at understanding what men like to do and what they like to watch and what they like to read, because we're very good at understanding what's happening on our own properties and figure out what that means for what the property should be.
Yeah. So there's a team of 35 behind Break.com, keeps it running and selects the videos and puts up new stuff. Is that right?
We have so many different properties now, so many different initiatives. It's hard to know where one starts and one stops for them. But I think it's probably about right. It's probably close to 45, I think, about it. More clearly.
Are you innovating? Are you doing new stuff on the site, or is the main thing to focus on the advertising and then to bring in new properties?
I think we're always trying to figure out cool new products. And we have, in a lot of ways, I think we have the most advanced Flash player out there for watching videos. We've got probably the best recommendation system for content. If you sum up a video, you'll get some really cool videos that are relevant to you based on collaborative filtering. We've got some great mobile products. A lot of people access the content on the site through either WAP or the iPhone. So we're continuing to innovate on the Break front, on the product-wise. But everything we do on the innovation side really is oriented around how we can serve our audience more effectively. So we try to figure out what guys are doing on the internet and offline, and try to make sure that we're doing a good job helping create products for them.
One thing I don't understand that I want to ask you, because maybe you can help me understand this. I see these sites, and I know one of the issues with a site like Break is you have a lot of traffic, but sometimes driving a lot of revenues is hard. And one of the things that we do with with a general direct response business model is you have a lot of people coming in that say that they're looking at your products, maybe considering buying them, and then a certain percentage of those, it's called the funnel. So a certain number will spend $10 with you, a certain number will spend $100, a certain number will spend $1,000, and a certain number will spend $10,000, and some will spend $100,000. And as long as you have enough people coming through and there's a funnel all the way through, there's certain numbers of people that will pay for things at different price points. And I don't see Fiverr or any of these. I mean, Fiverr has its members section, which drives a little bit of revenue, but not much. But I don't see much with these sorts of sites doing that sort of stuff. The most I seem to see is T-shirts. Can you help me understand the thinking of why you're not doing that kind of thing?
I think there's two reasons. One, we do partner with guys who do that, I think, is the short answer. You know, LA has got a huge direct response community, as I'm sure you know. And so we're taking meetings all day long with people who we think have products and services that will appeal to our audience. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I don't know if hand example of either one. But I think we're very good about trying to test things and help other people achieve the funnel and achieve getting people through that funnel and getting our fair share. In terms of why we're not out trying to do that for products for ourselves, it's just simply a resource allocation issue. We probably consider it and figure stuff out. It might even be worth it to do that, but in any given day when you've got millions of people come to your site and they're complaining and they have features that they want to see and they've got products and you've got advertisers doing what they want stuff, it's hard to take a step back and say, what else should we be doing that's just not completely related? So we try to, we try to meet with a lot of people who are doing exactly what you described, and we just try to help funnel our traffic over to them.
But it's about focus, basically.
Second?
It's about focus. That would be the main reason you're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the early partners we had really, really early on is the guys from Double Your Dating. And we were running tons of campaigns and promotions with them. It's still something we do on occasion. Certainly as different products approach us, we're always looking for a way to maximize the value of it, but also to try to find products and services the audience actually like. If we can help, give our audience some help introduce them to a product, that helps our brand equity as well.
Yeah, because I think about just before the call today, a TV station doesn't do that. You don't get a T-shirt from, nobody cares about T-shirt from ABC.
Right.
That would be kind of dumb. But some websites do that, and I think they'd do okay. I guess maybe I feel like the internet should be different. Why can't you have like the break.com, LA party, or, there's a break.com training seminar on how to make your own videos, and that kind of thing.
Yes, we can, absolutely. It literally is just as it becomes a focus issue. College Humor's done a really good job on the T-shirt side.
Yeah.
Leveraging that business. But it's hard when you have so many different things going on, and I feel like what you're talking about is what people do in phase one and a half or two of their business, which is right now we're just building audience and scale. And I think, in 2 years we'll figure out how we can leverage them, and in what are the ways we can profit from them. In a lot of ways, if you think about what we're doing on the mobile front, it is kind of leveraging. That's a transactional business. When people watch our videos on certain phones, we get paid. It was low hanging fruit.
Yeah,
someone else was doing it.
I completely agree with you when you talk about focus. There's too many people who aren't focusing properly, and so I certainly respect that.
Yeah.
When you talk about the advertising, what percentage of your site would be sold as brand high CPM advertising, and how much do you run as remnant, and how much do you run as ad spend?
I don't know, and I'm sure if I did the answer, it would be it depends on the day. There are certain phases and life cycles where products. We're a lot of stuff happens in the world. So I'm sure over the holidays it was almost 100% branded. In January it's probably a little less. And it's also a function of how fast we grow on a month-to-month basis. So, one of the most interesting issues with the internet is just pure forecasting of inventory. You have a really strong month, or in particular for a site like Break, where certain things become very viral, and you can have an extra 30 or 40 million impressions a month that you didn't count on having. That stuff usually ends up as revenue, just because it's not like I can get on the phone and fill out the branded advertiser. So
if you get on the DA, something like that, that's going to get a ton of volume.
Yeah, or you just have one video that pops, but if you have a bunch of videos that pop, it suddenly, you literally just end up with a ton more traffic. It's not monetizable, really. It's sort of like when a TV show has an unexpected hit. It's great that the advertiser benefited, but, it's not going to work sold more ads around it for the first episode.
So the biking traffic isn't that interesting. You want consistent.
You always want as much traffic as you can, but the spiking traffic is harder to monetize, whether it's random or otherwise. Because you're just not prepared for it.
And so you need stuff where you can go to someone like T-Mobile and talk with them about a campaign, and they come back to you with a brand objective that they want to achieve, and then you work with the inside and put them
through things. Yep.
That's basically where you spend your time, is that right?
Yep. And they benefit from the spike, because if it happens to be that there was a big day, they'll get twice as many users as expected.
Right. How do you keep those guys happy? I mean, where I come from is a straight direct response where it's all, every dollar's got to count and all that kind of stuff. And when you're doing that, you're selling, I mean, like in 99, you know, that was a great time to be selling inventory because it was, the CPMs were very high, but they seemed to go up and down like stocks.
Right.
How do you handle those guys and keep them happy and, you know, get them feeling like they're getting value, and how do they know they're getting value?
And it comes down to, you have to demonstrate, anytime there's money involved, you have to demonstrate ROI. And so increasingly there are tools to help you on the web. I mean, certainly there are better tools than exist in traditional media when really nobody is even watching it, watching your ads. But they have brand list studies that they do. There's a whole cottage industry of people who do ad effectiveness. You know, and at the most base level, a lot of times it's just how many people, you know, went over my site and click through. There's how many people view the video through video views. And then there's, you know, complete third party studies, which, you know, they can survey an audience. And find out how many people, you know before and how many people know afterwards. So it really is. Yeah, it's a lot less tangible in certain ways, but you know, there are certainly tools where people are trying to measure their ROI, and if they don't feel that they achieve the proper ROI, they end up not coming back. Unfortunately for us, I think we have almost 100% hit rate on return advertisers, so we're definitely doing something right.
Fine, I like that.
Here we go. But you're, again, like you're not paying.
I'm on your 4 visitors a month, I think.
There we go.
All time coming back. I mean, I just see it again. And so would you ever see that the branding guys that the CPMs are paying will drop and they'll become more return focused, or do you think things will be the way they are today?
I absolutely believe that on the average CPMs will drop for rounding inventory because there's going to be an endless supply of rounding inventory to a certain extent. I think what we try to offer is a really premium engaged experience where we can get you in front of an audience and hopefully transfer some of our brand equity over to you and put you and offer a suite of services which, as we said, help really introduce your brand to any of the users of any of our properties. And so we're finding that CPMs for premium value audiences are going up, but it's because it's so much harder and so much more work to provide the kind of access that we do. So you know, the challenge for us is continuing to maintain the same level of quality that we have as we grow. But if you can, you know, there'll always be a premium paid for stuff that advertisers are pretty confident are going to work for them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. And when I talked with Aaron about this on the last call, and he suggested that there is a lot of time and effort that goes into putting these deals together, and each one is like a custom deal. And so it's a high-value custom deal for each advertiser, which therefore you can present justifying a high value.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think one of the benefits of Break and the fact that we own, you know, the fact that we own properties and, you know, the property that we own our scale and have, you know, great loyalty is it's easier to justify that. You know, you're not looking at anything we're doing and saying, oh, we're dealing with, you know, 500 sites or, you know, it is, you know, in a lot of ways we feel like we're trying to build a Viacom of the internet where we have very strong branded properties, each with their own audience, and what we're doing is we're aggregating it from a sales perspective.
Right. And so I noticed you cross-promote on your site, so that's partly, I imagine you'll start some more sites before too long, won't you, and just keep cross-promoting them.
Yeah, I mean, as long as they keep being successful. I mean, we came out of that with such big, you know, with three properties that were so massively successful, we try not to get arrogant about it because, you know, just because you've been successful 3 times doesn't mean your fourth one will be a hit, so we're not exactly, you know, jumping out to create another 10 sites. We want to make sure we do these right and that. You know, they're not just, you know, 1 month wonders.
Right.
I think if a couple months these all have great traction, continue to have great traction, then absolutely we'll try to figure out what's next.
But so on Break, for example, you don't have like a membership program or anything, any extra benefits? You're not collecting emails or doing any of that sort of stuff?
No, yeah, it's hard. You know, you can register. You have to register to do a bunch of stuff. And we do collect emails, and we'll do, you know, we get, you know, I think we have well over a million registered users. You know, it could be even closer to 2 million. We've not begun monetizing it yet, so I haven't really tracked it, to be honest. But I think over time, you'll see more and more reasons to become a member. And, you know, I think you'll see not only us, but probably most sites within a few years have that premium distinction in their membership levels because you know, it makes sense. It's like any business. You want to differentiate your best customers. And so the question is, what value can you provide someone in order for them to do that? And that's, you know, what we're working through right now.
Yeah, well, Slack, I mean, I keep talking about Slack because I've built it through quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And his site is just that. They like to have a little extra stats. So there's a couple of other little things, but that's the main one.
He's built a great site where, you know, he does an amazing job understanding his audience. And so he knew exactly what that meant. To them, you know, on us, it's, you know, we can be a, you know, Brit Pro star, you know, or something, but I'm not convinced that's enough for the audience.
Right.
You know, so we're trying to figure out what else we can really perform.
So in getting this started, did you ever buy media, or did you just leverage the bad boys traffic you had in the beginning?
We leveraged the big boys traffic, and we did a lot of, you know, real viral marketing. So we go and, you know, we get ourselves booked on radio shows and stuff like that. Did a lot of radio early on, and, you know, did a lot of TV outreach and things like that. And in a lot of ways, that's what we're doing with Chickapedia and the other properties now. You know, it's a model that we know works, and so we've been really effectively telling, you know, we know radio people need to talk about stuff 24 hours a day, so we just try to help them something to talk about.
So, yeah, no, fair enough. I mean, and that's exactly what Drew's done with his site. So you haven't done, I mean, there's no email. I mean, how do people come back to your site? Is it through RSS or is it just driving traffic and coming back?
Most people type back there. We have an amazingly high direct traffic figure. I think it's something like 50 to 60% just typing in. You know, one way we can really improve is actually get better search engine optimization. But we are very similar to Fark in that we've got very loyal audiences, and that drives, you know, I think the rest of the people that come that day are those loyal audiences that share, you know, the guys that share videos with their friends and do stuff like that. there's a lot of opportunity, I think, for growth in capitalizing on, you know, the natural trends, of, you know, another natural traffic, set of traffic growth, you know, mechanisms. So we haven't done those yet.
Very, very interesting. All right, so moving on then. So there's the 4 sites, and now you're doing ad sales around those, and you're doing ad sales for another 20 sites?
Yeah, that's right.
How does that work? And can you talk about any kind of numbers there and what kind of stuff you're doing and then who you'd like to work with?
I mean, I think, you know, it's all going great. I mean, it's because we're providing, I think, a pretty solid value to the advertisers. You know, the network and the selling of the sites, you know, having said that, is also something we've done only for about 8 weeks now. And so it's, you know, as you know from your, you know, from your own experiences, it's a matter of making sure that the products you offer on each property are right and your ability to deliver what you promised to the advertisers are right. So we, you know, we're just now going through all those processes, but there's no doubt there's, you know, a lot of advertiser interest, in particular on sites that are more niche. So the Cage Potato, you know, it appeals to, you know, it's a mixed martial arts enthusiast site. You know, endemic mixed martial arts people love to advertise on there. People trying to reach manly men try to advertise on there. And so it's trying to make sure that you can deliver the right kind of advertiser, the right kind of audience. And, you know, we're just understanding those audiences right now because they're growing so fast, it's hard to beat them. And the network sites, you know, those are, you know, those already have more developed communities. And so I think what we're finding with those guys is that it's actually fairly easy to try to sell them. And, you know, we have great advertiser interest so far.
And so does this mean, like, let's say if you do a deal with T-Mobile for CashPotato.com, I don't know if it's a fit or not, but let's assume that it is. Does that mean you then...
Probably not off the bat,
okay.
Right? No. Yeah, go ahead.
Let's say you do a deal with the UFC to advertise on CashPotato.com. And so, and that's working there. Could you then take that ad buy and say, well, you know, you're already spending X dollars with us here. Why don't you do it around this on these other 5 sites as well and basically leverage your time and resources there?
You got it. It's more on the inquiry. You know, if someone says, hey, they want to advertise on Cage Potato, we can say, oh, can we bring you Cage Potato? We can bring you, you know, Chupia and, you know, Holy Taco and Break and, you know, Fret Play and Ninja Dude and all the other sites.
So what's some of the biggest sites that you have in your network?
You know, we've got a couple game sites. You know, BubbleBox.com is a very loyal male audience. Free Arcade is a very loyal male audience. Fret Play is a music, it's a guitar chord site. You know, those are three I personally go to the most because I like to play games on the internet and I like to play guitar. So, yeah, I'm a little partial from a usage standpoint. But if you break them down into categories, it breaks down into game, lifestyle, music, and I'm forgetting the other two categories. But, you know, we try to find sites that are in areas that we don't have inherent advantage in this break. So we're not going to feel competitive with the properties. If that makes any sense. So, we don't really have music.
It has to be similar, but not too similar, because otherwise it's a competitive issue.
Well, it's, you know, we want a similar type of audience, but we don't. You know, we don't want to feel like we can't share audience with the network site. So, you know, one value of joining in with Break is that we leverage the power of all the other properties to send more traffic to you. You know, if you look at our homepage, we link, you know, we rotate links into all the network partners. And it really is something that, you know, we're very happy to do because we feel like, you know, they're doing something better than we could do in that particular area. So, you know, again, it comes down to what the audience values. Yeah, the audience benefits if we can, you know, show them cool products and cool sites that aren't just ours.
Now, at what point do these sites work with you? At what point do they say, well, I want to go on Hymo and sales team and do this myself?
I mean, I think as we talked about earlier, you have to be able to, you know, I think 3 million unique visitors a month to even have that thought, because it's just so expensive. And, you know, at this stage of the game, you probably want to be closer to 10. You know, and not just that, and I don't know how much you call it ComScore, but you have to show up pretty significantly on ComScore as well, because you could have 100 million people, but none of them show up if you don't show up anywhere on ComScore, then the media buyers themselves don't see you. So, it's not that you have to have the traffic, you have to have the traffic that, you know, you got to hope coincides with the panel system that they all
and
use.
And you had problems with that? I mean, Drew's always complaining that he's not being represented properly there.
Yeah, I think anyone who's got a niche, anyone who's got a very loyal audience will not be represented. So we've got massive issues, and we still show up fairly high, but we've got fairly significant issues, and I imagine Drew has an even worse issue, because the more loyal and the more naturally demographically focused your audience is, the more the panel is not going to register you. Whereas people who show up, you know, who deliver 100% of the traffic from Google usually show up exactly right on the panel systems, because Google
is
just the norm.
The problem is that he has a very smart user base, and they are the ones that don't tend to have the ComScore spyware tracking things at all.
Right. And what kind of 25-year-old male or 20-year-old male is going to respond to a random digit dial and accept that panel system, right? it's only if your parents... Yeah, absolutely. But I think it's true for anyone who focuses on, you know, young men and young people as a whole. just not. It's not the way our demographic functions. Smart, you know, like if you're doing a random digit dial of people's home phones, you know, a lot of people are demographic don't even have a home phone, so you're not going to get them on the phone.
Okay. So, what are some other interesting things about your site and your model and that you're doing that you can share with us?
I mean, I think the cool thing about it is, you know, once you have a scale, you know, the cool things you can do, and nothing makes us happier when, you know, we can launch something like Chippy. If you can be launched 7 days ago, 10 days ago, and it's averaging 100,000 people a day, 100,000 unique visitors a day.
7 days ago, and it's already
It's 10 days ago.
And the electric is already 7,000.
No, that's a 3 month average. I think the daily electric rank is much higher. If you look at,
oh, wow.
And we barely linked to it before break yet. So I think it hit as high as 990 one day, in terms of rank. So it's great that you can do that. You have not only the traffic on your one site, but on multiple sites, and then you have the in-house marketing knowledge to do that. And so that's probably the most exciting thing is, you know, once you get to the level where you actually have time to do these things. Remember, it took us. And we've been around since, you know, essentially 04, end of 04, and it took us till, you know, the late 07 to launch a second property. but it takes a while to get there, but once you're there, you really can start having some fun with your property and what you're doing with them.
Do you ever have problems with P-Track? Like, I mean, you guys must know more than just about anyone than how to handle spike traffic.
No, I mean, the problem is it costs a lot to prepare for it, but you can't do anything other than, you know, spend more money and have the right equipment so that when something happens, you're in great shape. But I mean, also, that just goes, it goes back to, if you have to have the money and you have to have success somewhere to be able to afford Surface Oak, if we had launched Wikipedia and didn't have the money and didn't know that we might get 100,000 people, you know, a day on average, and we might, you know, peak at 200,000 for one of the first few days, if we didn't know that, you know, if we didn't have the rest of the infrastructure behind us, we probably wouldn't have had the right machines in place, and the site would have been slow and would have gone down, and everyone would have thought it sucked, and then you'd have been done. So you get back to, you know, once you're in a place where you actually have a real infrastructure, you know, Taking on all these different projects becomes much more doable and easier. And as we talked about, you know, so maybe we do some of the direct marketing stuff or something in phase 1.5 because we'll finally be at a place where we have enough infrastructure to do that. But it's, you know, in terms of our model, we are very well suited to continue to launch these new media businesses.
Hmm. Is there anything that ever brings you down or to the limit of what you can handle? I mean, if you're now, like, you know, people drive you, you're going to be able to work through it?
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine it. You know, we had days, we've had millions of people on the site, so it's not. Yeah, I suppose if everyone on the internet linked to us, I did a denial of service attack on us, but, you know, we have some problems, but, you know, there's nobody on the web except for maybe Google and Yahoo who wouldn't, at that point.
Actually, have you had lots of problems with iOS today?
No, it hasn't. I mean, got knock wood. I think most people are pretty good and don't try not to screw with you, so. Hmm. At least that's been our experience.
So then a last question I can think of is, let's say I have a product, and most of the guys that I know have remnant type stuff and advertise on your site. How do they do that?
Just shoot me an email and I'll get everyone together. We're always looking, like I said, we're always looking for ways to make more money.
You don't just want brand stuff, you also want that stuff.
I think, you know, we've got people in place whose job is to testing. So, like everyone else, we test it. If it doesn't work, you move on, and if it works, you keep doing it. we've got a lot of inventory to play with, as we talked about. So, we're always looking for stuff.
Well, I've got a bunch of guys that things are really converting. I'd love to talk to you. So you're gonna get some emails.
That's right. That's great. I mean, if we can all make more money, that's perfect.
Cool. Anything else you'd like to talk about we have?
No, this has been great. I really appreciate your time.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. This is great.